everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive Through HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. And this is your host, Nisha and William, joining with our wonderful guest. So before that, I would like to tell you all, guys, I've been following her on Twitter, Facebook, all over social media, and really wanting to talk to her in person. And I'm so excited that it is live on air at Drive Through HR. So it can't be better than that, right? So without further ado, let's kick off and welcome Rachel Falk.
Hi,
Rachel, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much. This is my first time on the show, so I'm really happy to be here. And again, I'm Rachel Falk, and yes, you can follow me as the Corporate HR Girl.
Great, great. Yeah, that name is so famous, Corporate HR Girl, and we would like to know more about that. And before we get to that, why don't you talk a little bit about yourself and what you do so our audience, if there is anyone out there who doesn't know of you, can get to know you.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm sure there are plenty who don't know me, but about a year and a half ago, I realized it was time to venture out on my own, and after about 14 years of working in both media and in the consulting field here in the Washington, D.C. area, I decided to venture out, and I've been working consulting in the areas of HR and more specifically with federal contracts held by professional services firms here in the Washington, D.C. area, and I would say lately, the focus has been more on social recruiting and employer branding as D.C. firms struggle to compete, you know, effectively in this market, especially in the areas of federal technology. So I'm having a great time consulting with, you know, a variety of firms from, you know, small tech startups to larger professional services firms here in the area.
Great. So let's move on to the question of the next 30 minutes. What's
okay.
keeping you up at night these days?
Well, you know, that's a really great question. And I would say for me, you know, for my clients specifically, we're all competing for the same skill sets, especially here in the D.C. area. And I would say often we have the same federal contracts. And we offer very similar benefit packages and salaries. And so then the kicker is a lot of times our candidates, our potential candidates and employees are sitting next to each other on site at these government agencies. And so you might be a sub to a prime and, you know, Deloitte might be sitting next to Booz Allen and people get to see each other and they know what's being paid at these companies, what the culture looks like. You know, so the question really is how do we compete and stand out as a leader in this industry when we're all competing for the same talent? And, you know, I've come to realize that it's really all about differentiation and, you know, it tends to link back to how we're adjusting our expectations when it comes to the topic of recruiting, interviewing, and hiring millennials. And I've found that especially in federal technology, some of the skill sets that we're looking for, most of our junior professionals with maybe 2 to 3 years of experience have those skill sets that we're looking for. However, they don't have numerous years of consulting or technology work experience. And so working with managers and firms to really understand that it's okay not to check all of the boxes on your requisition, you know, when you're looking at these candidates to determine who's going to be the best fit. So that's what I would say is a lot of times, you know, sure, we can interview professionals all the time. You know, if you've got 5, 10 years of experience, those are easy interview questions. But when it comes to interviewing more junior professionals, I think that's where the hang-up is with our managers and it gets stuck at the, you know, the move to offer stage.
So the first time you meet with a client, I'm assuming that you start with, you know, if budget weren't an issue, let's just say that mm-hmm. budget weren't an issue, just for a moment, let our minds wander, how would you recruit if budget weren't an issue, and how would you kind of scope that out for your clients?
You know, and sometimes budget's not the issue because we are bound by by government contracts. But I would say what it really relates back to is the culture and how we're differentiating ourselves. And so coming up with a recruiting strategy that's really going to focus on why we're different from the competitors is going to be key. And I find that with a lot of our junior professionals, with the millennials, they're looking for ways to just to get in and get busy and get started working and want to be able to produce, but want to see what the long-term options are for career growth and leadership opportunities and working with leadership side by side, wanting that visibility. And so we take budget out. It really comes down to culture and career growth opportunities.
So how do we better render culture, like the values of the firm, you know, engagement, culture, the retention of top talent? How do we render that to the public?
Well, you know, it really comes down to your employer branding. And I want to focus again, you know, here in the D.C. area, we all work together in some form, you know, our capacity. We rub shoulders with each other and work with competitors on a regular basis. And everything is talked about. Our network knows each other. And so it really comes down to what you preach. Do your actions speak louder than your words? And I find that if during the interview process, if you're lucky to get the candidate in, so you're doing great on social and you're out there recruiting and building the network, but if you're able to get them in the door for the interview process, it's really important to make sure you're tailoring your interview questions correctly and being prepared for those unorthodox questions that some of these junior professionals may shoot your way. Really making sure that you are talking about culture and that it's well known no matter where you go, because they're picking up on that. And if you don't, if it's not consistent, there's going to be a red flag there.
So I want you to take us into employer brand, if you don't mind, for just a second, and really your take on it. And what I really want to specifically get for the audience is the menu. Let's say you don't have a great employer brand, here's the things that you should have. And what are those most important elements from your perspective?
Most important elements of an employer brand. You know, what I've seen, it's been all about the relationship that the employer is building with potential candidates and even their customers. I think a lot of times employers forget that some of your biggest brand ambassadors are going to be the people that are buying your products, and they're also going to potentially be candidates or potential clients. So really it's about establishing and building that relationship, and that often occurs through social and regularly through your normal contacts in person. And so having the ability to create and build relationships and then make sure that it's consistent conversation, and then being authentic and really telling your story and making sure that people know who you are. And if the story relates back to your culture, and again, those are consistent, you're going to find that the employer brand really stands out and therefore is differentiating your firm from someone else's. And I'll say with the many candidates I talk with, a lot of times the reason why offers are either accepted or declined, because there's an opportunity to really feel a part of something bigger, to be a part of a culture, be a part of a relationship that they're not going to get somewhere else.
That is absolutely true. Well, while you're talking with your clients, and as you said, you wanted to have that consistent conversation with that candidates. Well, employer branding, everything is out there. People can search it all over social media, so candidates will have a first impression. But when they talk to that hiring manager, things might turn out differently. So what do you expect from that hiring manager when that interaction is happening with that candidate to keep that conversation going on and to keep that engagement going on?
Yeah, you know, that's really important. You know, a lot of times managers will be having interviews with candidates if we talk about the interview process. And I found that when a millennial asks about office hours, culture, workplace flexibility, you know, they're not showing a lack of interest or motivation. They just want to know what it's like to work there. And in a tight job market, it's a two-way street. I think a lot of times managers feel like all we want to talk about is the work, work, work. And, of course, junior professionals are interested in that too. However, they want to know what it's going to be like to work there, and they want to make sure that the word on the street is what your manager is talking about during the interview process. So it's important to sometimes, you know, I sit in on some of these interviews and try to understand what conversation is taking place, what story is being told, and is it consistent across the board? And then working with the managers to make sure that they are adequately relaying the information that, again, matches the culture. So keeping the conversation consistent. And when that person leaves the interview, they're sometimes going right to Glassdoor and filling out a review of your company and talking to their friends. And again, in this area, especially in federal technology, the competition is so tight that they're all talking to each other, and they have really sometimes really great referrals. So it's important to keep that story going strong and the messaging consistent.
That's great. So consistent messaging. What is your, as William has asked in the beginning about a recipe, what is your best recipe for making a quality hire?
A quality hire. You know, I have, for me, I'm not, gosh, I don't like checking every box. You know, sometimes we have a list of all of the really great things that we want in a candidate, and there might be, 15 or 20 different things that we want. And sometimes from the management perspective, we feel like, hey, we're paying the salary. We want to check all of these boxes. But it's important to make sure that you get a great match, not only in skill set, but culture, and the way that that person is going to be able to continue to tell that story and be your next brand ambassador to your customers or clients, someone that's going to be able to tell that story. So, again, you need to make sure that the job requisition matches, what you're looking for, but that it's okay if you're not able to check all of the boxes, that's okay, to look at other things that might be more relevant to the job and working with that, providing opportunities for training, for growth, leadership opportunities, visibility with leadership. I don't think that there's a perfect recipe. I think it's really a matter of making sure the relationship is there and the potential is there and then working with that and not being afraid to leave a few of the boxes unchecked. I mean, there's a mystery there, right? I mean, that provides for some great, some new creative ideas into your organization as well.
All righty. So you mentioned employee advocacy earlier, which I really love. I want to get your take as a consultant from the perspective when you work with clients. Either they've done that and they know how to do that, and then it's about kind of unlocking it and make it better, or they've never done that. And so it's kind of a blank screen. They don't know where to get started. So I'd like for you to take the audience into, okay, if you've never done employee advocacy, here's the five or six things you should be looking for. And if you have, I'd love for you to give us some examples of where you've seen it really kind of work.
So why don't I want to make sure we're on the same the same page here with employee advocacy. So why don't you give me an example?
Sure. It's just like, as you said, the employer brand, some of your best advocates are the folks that have already taken the plunge.
Mm-hmm.
They're there. They're employees. How do we share content? How do we make them more social? How do we extend them from behind the veil to folks that are thinking about coming back from and entering the firm, et cetera? So that's essentially called employee advocacy.
Yeah.
So how do you create advocacy in places where there isn't? And
right.
And if you could give us some examples of where you think that works, that'd be great.
So, you know, I remember saying this a while ago, and it was, I think I said it at True London or something like that, that, you know, if you trust your employees to answer your phone, you should also trust them on social media platforms. And they, again, are going to be your biggest brand ambassadors. They're able to tell a story. They are your, gosh, they're going to fill your pipeline with the best employee referrals. So it's important to make sure that you trust them. And I think one opportunity that people are still reluctant to take grasp of is, you know, for example, it's been summertime, right? And many organizations have had interns working in their firms and have had really great experiences. And, of course, they're going to go out and tell their friends. But how about putting your interns behind Twitter and putting them using their own account, making it a day in the life of an intern, a week in the life of an intern, having them tweet from the activities that they're involved in, the opportunities that they've had, and tweeting about that so that people, students at colleges, people who are looking to be interns next year, who are interested in you know, getting hired on, they get to see what it's really like to work there. And again, I think it goes back to having the relationship and being able to trust your employees to tell your story. And let me just say this, if you are living the culture that you preach and that you want, you should have no fear that the story is going to be misconstrued because you are all living that, right? Of course, there are going to be people who made postings that they shouldn't. However, generally speaking, if you live the way that you, the things that you're preaching and leadership is right there with you, you should be able to trust your interns tweeting behind with their own name with a connection to your firm about what it's like to actually work there and then building off from that. And people are still reluctant to do that. And I think it's unfortunate.
That's indeed great insights right there, Rachel. Let's do a quick reset and give a shout out to our audience. Everyone, you are listening to Drive Through HR, and we are talking to our wonderful, wonderful guest, Rachel Falls. She is on Twitter, Corporate HR Girl. Give a shout out to her. And if you have any questions, use the hashtag DTHR and ask your questions to our guest, and we will be able to pull that up. So, Rachel, as we talk more about, you know, recruitment and candidates, we always know that candidate experience should be there in order to attract and retain your best talent. So what are some expectations that candidates might be having at the front end and which recruiters or probably employers are finding it really tough to deliver that?
Well, I think often the disconnect with the candidate experience comes down to technology. And, you know, I've worked for firms before where their product is all about technology. However, during the recruiting process, there is a lack of technology or anything, technology that happens to be efficient. You want to make sure that you're able to build these relationships, interact with your candidates across multiple platforms, whether that involves, you know, tweeting out interview times or job postings to texting your candidate to say, hey, there was a change in the schedule. Can you make it, you know, tomorrow instead of Wednesday? Being able to interact using technology, I think that a lot of times we find we're reluctant to invest in technology, or we find that our applicant tracking system does what we needed to do. However, we're reluctant to look beyond that. And it's also sometimes difficult for HR to have the education around technology and to present the need for more money to your CFO. I mean, to go in front of your CFO and say, I need this much money for this technology, and this is the impact it's going to have on our candidate experience, especially, you know, in the economy that we've had, that's tough. So I think that we need to look back at how, one, our relationships are with our candidates during that process, but also the kind of technology that we're using. Are we making their lives easier? Are we making it more consistent for them? Can they apply for this position at any point from any platform? And even something as simple as an autofill, are those things, do they exist, and are you able to employ them? So I would really look at your technology that you've got. There's some great onboarding technology out there, and I would encourage people to look at that. And a lot of times, if it's a great vendor, they're going to work with you and provide that education that's necessary so that you can talk with your leadership, get it implemented, and then really see how it impacts the candidate experience.
All right. We briefly talked about culture at the very beginning, and we were remiss in not asking you, first of all, you probably run into clients that really don't understand that. You know, everyone has a culture. There's always a work culture. It might not be something you want to render publicly, but there's a work culture there. But they might need, you know, the primer's guide of what are great examples of culture. So I want to ask you your take on, when you look around at the space, who are some of your favorite go-to examples of culture, and why do you love them?
Gosh, you know, that's a really good question. And I think A lot of times it comes down to the industry, the area that you're in. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. A lot of employers don't really understand culture. And a lot of times there's a disconnect between leadership and frontline managers. You know, leadership will spout that we have this culture, we believe in these things. However, it doesn't trickle down to anyone else. And so it's sort of like this sort of view sometimes culture as this picture frame on a wall that sort of just collects dust and people see it there, but nobody really understands what it means. So it's important to make sure that we do understand culture. What do we believe? What do we stand for? What's our story? And I would say, you know, I link back to IEO, they're, you know, a world-renowned design firm. And when you walk into their lobby, when you talk to their employees, they're all about telling the story. And I know that their lobby is full of things that have been created that you can touch and see. And it tells a story about their design firm and gets people excited. I would also say that, you know, just being here in the D.C. area, professional service firms are great, but I would say Deloitte seems to stand out the most when it comes to consulting because they do allow, you know, the day in the life of an intern. They participate in a lot of community service projects where their culture of giving back, not only with mentoring within the organization, but providing out, you know, externally is present, and it gets people excited, and people see the employees show up and like, you know what, I want to be part of something like this, something bigger than myself. So, you know, there are great examples out there. It's just, and you can tell even when you walk into a store, you know, does the customer service even match what you think it should be? So those are just a couple of things that I, you know, off the top of my head.
Interesting. Well, you know, Rachel, we have, as an organization, we have an overall work culture, and which is there everywhere available, which can be seen everywhere available on social platforms and on their website and everywhere. But every team has its own team dynamics and its own microculture. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a game of a hiring manager and the manager, that candidate who is going to work with. So what are some questions that you would suggest to our candidates, those who are listening, to probably ask to the hiring managers to really understand what the culture that he is going to be working with, to understand
so
the team culture?
So for the candidate, from the candidate's perspective?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I find, let me answer this with an example of something that could be done. So let's say that you've got 10 requisitions that you need to fill pretty quickly. And maybe some of them are quite similar and others might be a little bit different. And one thing that you could do is instead of bringing a specific candidate in multiple times, doing it with multiple teams, why not an interview day? Why not bring in four or five candidates on one day, bring them all in so they can meet with the variety of teams within that particular business line and have them meet with them, understand, you know, what the role is, what the project looks like, and get a grasp for what the team actually does. And not only does the interview team or the project team have a chance to interview the candidate, but vice versa. The candidate has a chance to understand what the teams do, what the dynamic looks like, the personality, and they can also do, you know, that reverse interview, take the time to understand what they may be getting into. So I think it's important from the candidate experience to make sure that you understand that culture. And again, in a firm, you're right, you're going to have multiple, you know, little, I don't want to call them silos, but you'll have teams with different personalities, and sometimes they are doing their own thing and that works for them. So I think it's important if you are a candidate looking at an organization that you want to work in, it's important to interview them, follow them on social, understand what their culture is, and maybe even get involved in some other kind of LinkedIn or Twitter chats that are team-based to have a better idea on what that culture may look like.
All right, so I got to ask you about corporate HR girl because we got about 5 minutes left in the show, and this is actually the first place I became familiar with your brand and you
right.
as a person, all that other stuff. So first of all, launching that, obviously you were, you know, anonymous, quote unquote anonymous, and all of that stuff. So take us into a little bit of the history, but also take us into where you're taking that. Like, what's the evolution of corporate HR?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me this because we had a great conversation about this at St. Louis, Missouri Sherm. You know, when I first decided to launch out, I had my gosh, it was hard to come up with kind of your handle, you know, what do you want people to call you? And I realized so often people refer to me as the corporate HR girl because I worked at the corporate office of a large media company. And I went with that. And for me, my base at that point, my focus was HR. And the corporate HR girl seemed to just take off. And at that point, I wasn't willing or wanting to tie my name to it. I felt I needed some sort of handle that was a little bit different than my name, you know, for whatever reason. Fast forward a year and a half that I've been doing this on my own, I realized that I'm not only consulting in HR, but I'm also consulting in areas of PR and branding. But it's probably important at some point in the near future to, you know, put the corporate HR girl aside or keep that linked with HR and come up with something different that kind of relates back to me as my own personal brand. And so looking at that now, you know, it can be difficult when you're going out on your own trying to figure out how people are going to know you and how do you want them to know you. And then, again, trying to determine what my story is and how I want that to be relayed across the country or the world. So, I'm still thinking about that.
Which is really interesting and amazing to see how that blog has evolved. And you have a Facebook page as well, and then Twitter handle is also on the same name. So whenever you go to conference or any event, people address you, hey, you are the corporate HR girl.
They do. They do. The corporate HR girl's in the house, and we want to run over and say hello. Yeah, you know, and I love that. That's a part of me. That's my personality, and I'm happy to have it. I like that. However, it's getting to the point now where Rochelle Falls is a brand, and people want to hear what Rochelle has to say. You know, I'm talking about myself in the, you know, I need to move towards that at some point. And I know, Ken mm-hmm. Kep, you've had some thoughts on that as well, and I've appreciated your insight into that.
Great. Well, Rachel, we are about to wrap up the show. We have about 2 minutes left at this point. And so what it is that you really wanting to communicate to our recruiters out there? Maybe one or two things that you really wanting to see them stop doing when it comes to, you know, providing better candidate experience. If they can stop that two things, they can provide better candidate experience. What would be that?
You know, first of all, again, I want to say thanks for having me on the show today. It's been a real pleasure. And thanks for all the supportive cheerleaders I've got out there, my fan club. Thanks for all the support, guys. I want to say, just focus on the relationship. Just focus on building that. I think that you will win over more candidates with the relationship that you provide, with the consistent messaging and the storytelling. I think that is what relates someone to your organization. That makes them want to join you. If you are continually just by the book checking boxes and it's sort of very robotic, that's not interesting, it's not fun, and it's not you. So I would say be you, be authentic, tell the story, tell your own personal story, and make those relationships count, because in the end, that all drives your revenue. So again, I just wanted to say thanks for having me on board today. It was really a lot of fun, and look forward to doing it again at some point.
We look forward to doing a show with you again soon. So thank you so much for making this conversation a delightful one. So, Rachel, where can people connect with you and come and find you?
Sure. At Corporate HR Girl on Twitter. I am also on LinkedIn and starting my own show on Blog Talk Radio called HR Now. That'll be launching in the next 2 weeks, so look forward to that as well. But, yeah, connect with me on Twitter, and we'll take the relationship from there.
Great. So good luck with that, HR Now. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for all the tweets that you have tweeted out there and all the social media love, which is really, really great. And have
yeah,
a wonderful rest of the day. And we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye, Rachel. Bye, William.